Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Or
here's John Williams.
Playing big thoughts. Mm-mm. Some holiday thoughts for you in a minute. You're going to like this. Hi, it's John. It's 109. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. What a pretty day outside. Glare coming through the big Showcase Studio window wall. I can't hardly see the lid buttons in front of me. What a first world problem, John. Okay, so on the show today, we'll visit with a reporter on the economic scene from the Washington Post about the tax plan, which looks like is passing, the reform bill scheduled to go through. They're voting as we speak. We'll keep you posted on that and then talk about if this is a good thing or bad thing. It looks to me like on the short run, it's going to be a good thing. Our grandkids will be screwed, but that's not the point. And maybe it will be better than we think. Let's hope so. Hey, by the way, here's a heads up. Tomorrow at 11 a.m., where are you going to be? Tomorrow at 11 a.m., well, I got to do this. 11 a.m., I want you to be near a browser. I want you to open it up. I want you to go to WGN Radio's Facebook page, and there you will see me and Steve Bertrand and friends of ours from the Chicago Tribune doing the Mincing Rascals. You'll watch us record live our podcast, and you'll get a chance to interact. You can ask questions, make comments. In fact, you can do it right now on our Facebook page. And there will be a Donate Now button there. We're doing this live presentation in the hopes of raising more money for the Salvation Army. We're not going to talk about the Salvation Army on the podcast, at least not much anyway. The point is to do what we normally do, which is let those really smart reporters and editorial writers and cartoonists talk about the day's news. And so whatever's the hot topic tomorrow, that's what we will be talking about, and we want you to be part of it. I know a lot of you are fans of the Mincing Rascals. I don't know where you're listening to podcasts these days, but wherever you do, make sure you download and listen to for free the Mincing Rascals and watch it tomorrow at 11.
Do you think people are actually listening when you do it? It might be different.
What do you mean? Oh, yeah.
I never really considered that anyone's listening to it.
I know totally what you mean. We've got to be just as natural and free-form as we normally are, Steve.
Hello, John.
It's kind of weird because you and I are people who live on the radio for public consumption, and yet the idea that now we'll be live streaming on Facebook, you can see us.
Well, the commenting part is what you should be nervous about.
Oh, yeah, what people are going to say?
Yeah, they can chime in.
I don't read that.
Violetta, you can chime in, too. You'll be able to write in, hey, well, what about this? Or why don't you guys talk about that? Or, hey, John, what a great sweater.
You know,
whatever you want to say. I mean, really, I'm all for the irreverent, too. If you want to be off topic, go right ahead. We don't have to address it, but we could. This is your one chance to talk to the Mincing Rascals as we do it live. You'll see the five of us in the studio kibitzing, and that'll be tomorrow at 11 a.m., tomorrow at 1:30, live on this radio show, we're going to do a Harry Potter challenge. Are you guys good at Harry Potter?
Yes.
Violetta, did you read all the books?
I saw the movies.
I don't know. I've not read one word. I've only seen maybe one and a half of the movies.
Hmm. I read the first book.
Yeah.
I said, this will never make it.
My sister read all of them. I sat down and read one page of the second book, and I took a nap. But it's just not for me, but I loved watching it.
Well, I said to my son, who produces here on weekends, I said, are you a Harry Potter expert? And he goes, no. I said, did you read the books? He goes, yeah, I read all of them. I said, did you watch the movies? He goes, yeah, I watched all of them. And then I start talking to him about it, and he's really knows his Harry Potter. He goes, but I'm not an expert. I said, well, what an expert makes? He goes, oh, there are people out there that know this stuff. So we've assembled a panel of experts on staff, which does not include producer Griffin. And they're going to be like Spike Odell and Dave Stewart used to do, stump the chumps. You call in with a Harry Potter trivia question tomorrow at 1:30. And if you stump our panel, you win tickets to Potted Potter, the show which is at the Broadway Playhouse at Water Tower Place. If you know somebody who is a Harry Potter fan, they'd love to see this show. 1:30 tomorrow.
1:10, I thought.
1:10. Oh, that's right. Thank you, Elif. Yeah, we're going to open the show with a couple of questions on this. So 1:10 tomorrow. 1:10, right about now, tomorrow. And then again at 2:10 tomorrow. We'll give you two chances. So listen to the whole show tomorrow, 1:10 and 2:10, for your chances to win tickets to that Harry Potter show. On our Christmas Spectacular, we're all recording hour-long specials that will run over Christmas Eve and Christmas Day here on WGN Radio. I'm including scenes from some of our favorite Christmas movies.
This is the North Pole.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
No, it isn't.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not. Where's the snow?
Why are you smiling like that?
I just like to smile. Smiling's my favorite.
Make work your favorite. That's your favorite, okay?
Okay.
Work is your new favorite.
Fine.
It's time for the announcement. Okay, people, tomorrow morning, 10 a.m., Santa's coming to town.
Santa! Oh, my God! Santa here? I know him.
I like that movie more and more I see it. The more I see Will Ferrell as Buddy the Elf, the more I like that movie. I have not watched it yet this year.
Hi, Buddy the Elf. What's your favorite color?
Well, that's the thing. So I'm curious what... Hey, listen, I've got some time for this thing. I'm still cobbling it together, so I'm soliciting right now, 312-981-7200. What scenes should we include? What are the best movies or TV show scenes from Christmas that you like that we should include?
I have one that I just thought of.
All right, Elif, go.
Do you remember Mr. Bean in...
Yep.
He plays the guy at the jewelry counter in Love Actually when he's packing the present for him.
Classic. It's a very funny scene. And this is my worry. That may be too visual because a lot of it is him just taking his time while the guy's agonizingly trying to get out of there before his wife sees that he's buying a gift for his girlfriend. And Mr. Bean is saying, just a touch more. And then he's putting in the glitter and the sprinkles and then the ribbon zip. And he's like, oh, finish it. He's cheating on his wife, and even I wanted Bean to hurry up.
And the funny part is it's not Mr. Bean, but in all our minds, he is Mr. Bean right there.
Yeah, same actor, right? Yeah, it's kind of the same bit.
And he acts like him.
I know, that's what I mean. Okay, so how about this one? This is, what are we playing here, Elif? This is a scene from...
National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
Can I show you something?
Oh, Lord.
Oh.
Chevy Chase at the lingerie counter.
Smiling. I was just browsing.
For your wife or your girlfriend?
What? What happened? Woof. I guess wouldn't be any... wouldn't be the Christmas shopping season if the stores were any less hotter than they are. Whew, it is warm in here.
Well, you have your coat on.
Yes. Oh, do I? How did that happen?
Because it's cold out?
Yes. Yes. It is. It's a bit nipply out. I mean nippy out. What did I say? Nipple? There is a nip in the air, though.
Can I take something out for you?
No. She's real pretty, and he's just losing it.
I'd never realized how closely he resembled you until I heard that.
I'm thinking, oh my God,
Watching it, no, but listening to it.
I'm going to take that as a compliment,
Steve. You can take it any way you'd like.
No, it's not. But
the next one reminds me of you.
Okay, what are you playing now?
This is Jim Carrey as the Grinch.
This is why he cannot go to the holiday hoobilee in Whoville.
Even if I wanted to go, my schedule wouldn't allow it. 4 o'clock, wallow in self-pity. 4:30, stare into the abyss. 5 o'clock, solve world hunger. Tell no one. 5:30, jazzercise. 6:30, dinner with me. I can't cancel that again. 7 o'clock, wrestle with my self-loathing. I'm booked.
I gotta tell you, I love that movie. I love the cartoon. I love the movie even more. And that is my favorite scene. That's my favorite lines of dialogue in that whole flippin' movie. And I love that movie. I would say, jazzercise. I love that!
It's you in that movie.
I'm going to take that as a compliment, even though it's not intended to be.
No, it is. It's a compliment.
Yeah, sure. It sounded like one.
Okay, well, fine. Nobody understands me.
So, Elif, go back to the Bowie movie where he walks into his... his prison keeper.
Let's.
And his life is spared by this.
So I say, Bertrand, what's your favorite like Christmas movie scene? Now, what's the movie you're describing here?
Merry Christmas, Mr. Lawrence.
And it is set where?
In a Japanese prisoner of war camp. I mean,
has this movie been released theatrically, or is this just something you saw?
No, my son and I made it a couple years ago. No, it's from, I want to say it's from the early 80s, maybe, and David Bowie and Tim Conti play these British World War II prisoners, and they're in some South Pacific island, and it's very sort of tense.
Okay, well...
In one scene, he goes in and his life is spared.
Right.
Merry Christmas, Mr. Lawrence. Merry Christmas.
Okay, wait a minute. Here's an audible. Instead of the one I just told you, Al, if we're going to go ahead and use an Asian accent to mispronounce English language words, let's go to the Chinese restaurant scene from Christmas Story. The crew from the restaurant has come out to sing to the family some Christmas carols. They bring out eventually a duck. They're going to have a whole duck for Christmas at this restaurant because they killed the turkey in the kitchen. Everything caught fire. So they say, we're going out. They go out. And the guy brings out a duck that has not yet had its head cut off, among other problems.
Oh, what fun it is to ride in one horsey open train.
No, stop. Kitchen, bring food for
customers. Yes, it's a beautiful duck. Yes, it really is. It's, but you see,
what?
It's smiling at me.
Well, it's not smiling anymore. You know what I love about that scene is that the father is the one that's battling the furnace, and he's always angry, and he uses terrible language, and, you know, he's struggling with keeping a roof over his family's head. He's distracted by having won the leg lamp, but life is, you kind of believe, toilsome for him. And yet he puts on such a good face. He has such good humor in that restaurant scene because I could see him getting angry. Well, our dinner's been ruined and now you've got this duck. Its head hasn't been cut off. But instead, they're all really enjoying the moment. It's so bad, it's good. And they're all just having a great Christmas moment and a great Christmas movie. Okay, those are some of our suggestions. 312-981-7200. What did we miss? I'm going to stick this in my Christmas spectacular and play it on Christmas Day. What else? What scene? What movie or TV show clip needs to be in there? You know, if you had to stop on one Christmas scene, one set of Christmas lines from TV-dom and movie-dom, I think you may have to go here.
And there were in the same country shepherds, abiding in the field, keeping watch over their flock by night, and lo, the angel of the Lord came upon them, and the glory of the Lord shone round about them, and they were sore afraid. And the angel said unto them, fear not, for behold, I bring you tidings of great joy.
How about that?
I don't even know what that's from.
Oh, boy.
Wow.
Oh, boy.
That's not something to be proud of, Violetta.
Oh, I'm not proud of it.
This is a cultural divide.
But have you guys ever seen Santa Claus with Tim Allen?
It's the Bible,
We're
Violetta.
Not done
it's
talking
from the
to
Bible.
You. It's from the Bible. That's the nativity scene, and it's done by Linus in A Charlie Brown Christmas.
Oh, that sounded more like what the adults would be saying. Wah, wah, wah.
You know, I went on... Steve, you've got to take your head out of your hands. I was on my Xfinity button.
I'm sorry?
I was searching. And by that I mean I was searching
that
on...
takes you to beyond?
On-demand Christmas movies and TV shows. And there was a Charlie Brown Christmas. And I said, oh, good, I'll watch this. It'll be free. It's not. You cannot watch a Charlie Brown Christmas for free on TV. Well, that's not the spirit of Christmas. The spirit of Christmas is you let me watch it for free, Jack. Why do I have to give the Charlie Brown estate $2.99 to rent it or $6 to buy it?
I don't think he really, Charlie Brown, he doesn't have an estate.
It would seem to me that that is the one that should be free, and that is probably exactly why they're charging me $3 to rent it, for crying out loud. And I say, well, I've got the DVD. I'll just pop that in. Oh, wait, we don't have a DVD
player. I was going to say, how many different versions of it? Because that was the other thing. It used to be special because you could only watch it once a year.
On TV,
on CBS. And then it became, with our kids, how many times are you going to watch The Grinch, you know?
You're going to watch it on VHS. Oh, wait, we got rid of the VHS player. That's okay, we got a DVD player. Oh, wait, we got rid of the DVD player. So now I'm back to where I was in 1978. I now have to wait for it to come on TV, or I have to pay to watch it.
But right. You would have had to pay to buy the DVD.
Yeah, that's the point. He bought the VHS. He bought the DVD. The technology's useless, so now he's going to pay to watch it on his TV.
Or I just keep all of those old machines stacked up one generation after another on top of my cable box, which we don't want to do. By the way, Bob wanted to say something. Hey, Bob, you're on WGN. What can I do for you?
Hey, John, how are you? You were talking about the scene in Christmas Story at the end of it when the waitstaff comes out and they sing with a heavy Asian accent.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if you saw the live version of it the other night.
No, I did not.
He brings the waitstaff out. The gentleman that plays the owner of the restaurant is the guy from Hangover. And he brings the waitstaff out, and it's all his sons that are home for the holidays. Nice. And they're like Ivy League. You know, he introduces them as Ivy League kids. And they sing the most beautiful a cappella version without any accent whatsoever. It is a beautiful way to address that. And how we have those stereotypes going in. I guess they filled it back in with the stereotype of them being extremely well at school.
Right, it's a positive stereotype instead of the rolling of the L's.
Exactly. It was beautiful. It was really well done. Matthew Broderick, who had, well done.
I thought you were going to call in and say, so they changed to be politically correct, the Japanese restaurant staff singing the Christmas carol in A Christmas Story, but you're okay with that. Better this than that.
I was. I was really impressed with it. I'm a big thing for immigrants and third culture kids, and a positive message about immigrants, about how, and really how third culture kids really do exceed the kids that were born here. The immigrants' children, they're the ones that go on and get the master's and the doctorates, lawyers.
It seems to be they try harder. Yeah, no, I get it.
They do. They far out exceed the regular people that have it given to them.
And that's interesting. Hey, thanks for the phone call. I appreciate the heads up. What's going on, Steve, before we go to the news?
Just want to let you know the House has just voted to approve the tax cut plan, so they're halfway there.
Because the Senate still has to approve.
Senate could vote later this afternoon or evening or tomorrow, but I think they're hoping to get it done today.
But this is the Senate version that the House approved.
It's the compromise version that the House and Senate sat down. They had conferees. They came out with a reconciled bill, and this is the final package.
John Williams, we're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. LF, before this half hour is up, let's say around 150, let's see where we are on our virtual kettle for the Salvation Army. I've got my bell out, Steve. It's a pen, but on one end there's a little bell. So when I take notes during the show, like, isn't Steve Bertrand awesome?
Well, that's a beautiful sounding pen.
And now he likes the pen. We'll see how we're doing on that. Remember, at 11 o'clock tomorrow morning, 11 a.m. tomorrow, I don't know where you're going to be, but remember, we'll be streaming live on Facebook, the Mincing Rascals podcast. It's a roundtable news discussion with some really smart, funny, clever folks. I'll be the MC. You'll be able to watch it. There will be a Donate Now button while you're watching it, and that goes to the Salvation Army. So you can interact with us. You can ask questions and make comments. We'd love that. And as a bonus, we can all help my virtual kettle fill up. That story yesterday about that Amtrak train derailment in Washington State is just so tragic and strange and wrong. The train might have been doing 80 miles an hour in a curve where it should not have been going faster than 30, as I understand it. Train 501, the Wall Street Journal said, was the first train of the morning on Amtrak's Cascade route. Some folks out that way said, don't put that train there. It's going to be dangerous. And on its maiden voyage, doesn't it seem like the Titanic? The maiden voyage with the band playing, trying to go too fast to impress somebody, knowing they should go slower, it derails. And now what's the future for this thing? I got a lot of questions about this. Hannah Scott joins us now. She's a news anchor on KIRO Radio. Hannah, it's John Williams, and you're on WGN in Chicago. How are you?
I'm great, John. How are you?
Good. You are in Seattle, right?
I am, yes.
So where are you then in relation to the track and the route?
Seattle is about 40 miles north of where this derailment happened. I was there at the scene yesterday. So it's in Pierce County, again, like 40 miles south of Seattle.
I want to ask you about the derailment itself, but first just tell me about that line, the route. And we hear this is a high-speed train. Is it that technically? I mean, what exactly was this?
It is a high-speed train. So this is a project about 10 years in the making. They had retrofitted these tracks because some of these tracks, this line was very, very old. They had retrofitted these tracks to make this high-speed train that could go about 79 miles an hour was what it was supposed to be able to go. And it travels from Seattle to Oregon and back and then up to Vancouver on one of the lines as well. So yesterday, there was a lot of buildup. There had been a lot of concern, and as you had mentioned, with some city officials in a city called Lakewood, which isn't far from where this derailment happened yesterday. They were concerned that it was too fast, that they weren't concerned specifically about where the train derailed, but some grades that are a little further down the line, but that just in general, that it was too fast. It passes over I-5, our main freeway, multiple times, and there was concerns. There's neighborhoods and things in the area. So the mayor of that city, Lakewood, had said way back that it was just going to be a matter of time before there was an accident. Certainly no one expected it would be on the first day, on the very first train that launched yesterday morning on that inaugural run.
What's the length of the route? How far does it go one place to another?
Well, it goes from Seattle to Oregon. This particular line, the new track, the updated high-speed part, was about 14 and a half miles. Again, they had retrofitted that. The idea here was the line that used to run this Cascade train went right along the Puget Sound, right along the water. So even in July, we had an Amtrak derailment along the older route near the water where some of the cars nearly went into the water. Everybody got out okay with just some minor injuries on that one. But that line was supposed to be used originally just for freight trains, and there was a lot of congestion on it. So the two reasons they built this new line was to, one, have this faster train route, which between Tacoma and Seattle was going to, or Tacoma and Olympia, our capital city, was going to shave about 10 minutes off your ride. So it saves you about 10 minutes is the goal there. And then also to reduce that congestion on the old line, so really just freight trains would use it now.
What happened yesterday?
What happened yesterday is that train, and what we're hearing from the NTSB team that landed here last night, is that the initial download from the one of the recorders on there shows that that train was going 80 miles an hour right as it headed into this curve where the derailment happened. So while it's allowed to go, that new line, 79 miles an hour, it is not. There are various points across the line where you have to slow down to the posted speed limit, which there would have been 30 miles an hour to go over that trestle, that overpass, and into that curve. But NTSB is telling us that that train appears to have been going 80 miles an hour, which, you know, the curve is not a super sharp curve. It's more like a C as opposed to a sharp L-type turn, but it's still a turn, and there's no way, if you can see the site, that you could be taking that at 80 miles an hour and not expect to see what happened yesterday.
Did the conductor survive? What are we hearing?
We're hearing that they were disoriented. The engineer and any of the other crew on board were disoriented, but no one was terribly injured among the staff is so far what I'm hearing from Amtrak. But, yeah, we don't know anything about whether – I asked earlier Amtrak whether this was – the engineer in the previous derailment I had told you about had been suspended because in that case, too, that train was going too fast. I asked if this was that same engineer. I didn't get an answer, but that's something we're looking
at. Well, what are they saying? Why did it happen? Why was it going that fast?
They are not saying anything like that at all. They're leaving it up to the NTSB, kicking the football that way, which, and the NTSB is going to be here on the ground for about 7 to 10 days. They'll release a preliminary report here in about 8 weeks, but we won't have any solid conclusions for about a year, which is usually the case with NTSB. But they're looking into whether it was conductor error that caused the speed or some sort of mechanical issue with the train.
Well, if the train going into that curve, we've all seen, most of us, I mean, go online, you can see the overhead shots of this turn it was negotiating, and it's obvious that it's sharp enough that 80 miles an hour sure looks too fast. If the conductor knew it going in, was he unable to? I'm asking you questions I now know you don't know the answer to, Hannah, but you'd think he would be trying to brake or slow the train. Was it operator error, or was he unable to slow the train?
And those are the two things the NTSB says they're looking at. No solid answers yet on that. We did have engineers said some time back that they were concerned about that curve. Who spoke to some investigators out here. This is prior to this line. This is back when they were having the fight about whether to do this line at all. Who were concerned about the way that an engineer would have to negotiate that going in there, whether they'd be able to make a good estimate about how soon to slow down. But even if you're starting to slow, you still shouldn't have been at 80 miles an hour once you got to that overpass and into that turn. So everyone wants to know why that speed was what it was.
Do you know the answer to this then? What is this? What does this spell for that line and for high-speed trains then there in Washington?
No one has said that yet. I know any of the additional trains that were going to go have been canceled for both today and yesterday. Or there's some that are now using that old route that I told you about on that freight line that was supposed to be.
Well, is the track still serviceable? I mean, could you still run a train there?
There's still some cars on top of that, some rail cars. They're going to inspect that, the bridge, the overpass there to see. It's not clear yet how badly the actual tracks were damaged.
I see. You know, some people are great advocates for this sort of thing. We've talked in Chicago just a couple of weeks ago about a high-speed line between downtown Chicago and O'Hare Airport, and how would we build that, and blah, 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 blah. I'm surprised that it was only saving 10 minutes when you consider the cost, but some people are just afraid of these things. None of this helps you guys going down the road then, does it?
No, not for anyone trying to, you know, advocate for the fast rail trains. Absolutely not.
What was the cost?
The cost, $180 million.
Yeah. To say nothing of the lives, the people injured, and the people who, is it three? Is that the number you're still at there?
We have three dead. We've got at least five patients, though, that are in ICU and several others with pretty severe injuries. So I haven't heard anything today about any further fatalities from those patients in the hospital. So knock on wood, hopefully they'll recover.
Amen to that. Hannah Scott, news anchor at KIRO Radio in Seattle. Anything else I should know about this before I let you go, Hannah?
No, I think we got it covered.
Well done. Thanks for your time.
You bet.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
And by the way,
here's John Williams.
What?
You dipped in and heard the reporters ask one question. There were 23 or 24 others.
That they asked about, and they weren't all about how this affects President Donald Trump, this tax plan.
Exactly.
So where I'm criticizing them for focusing on that, that's what they were focusing on. When I focused on them, they asked bigger picture questions.
They asked other questions. They also were asking about the guy who you highlighted last week. You chased him out of a job.
Corey Lewandowski?
No, the federal judge nominee.
Oh, yeah, right. Matthew Peterson.
They're asking about his withdrawal and things like that. I mean, it's a long briefing. It's certainly a relevant question.
I think those, even when Sean Spicer, whose White House press briefings are better television, Sarah Sanders or Sean Spicer's?
It depends on how you like your TV, right? If you want to...
I'm Team Spicy.
Are you?
He was like the original. He was the original. He made them fun again.
Yeah, some people like to really watch stuff that they don't like.
Oh, that's why Rush Limbaugh was successful. It's called hate listening, or watching in this case.
You like it if it's funny, though. If it's really tense, like a, you know, drama reality show.
Yeah.
Like you've said.
It's not healthy if you're sitting there and you're gritting your teeth and you're just going, oh, I can't stand these people. But you're leaning into your screen. That's the White House press briefing since the middle of January. I mean, that's just the way it's been. I don't know. Maybe there are people that go, you go, Sarah. You go, girl. That's right. Uh-huh. That boy, Spicy. Spicy getting it done. I wonder if there are people like that. But mostly people are leaning into the TVs and they're going, oh, my God. Oh, my God. Seriously? So before the break, Steve and I were in a little bit of a disagreement. I said that the question, how does this impact the president's personal taxes, is utterly irrelevant. That's not an important thing for us to focus on. And while there were other things that the media talked about, you at least engaged me on that, Steve, and said, no, that's important, too.
Well, I think it's certainly a very fair question, especially... And let me say, I don't think how he benefits, I don't know this, but how he benefits had any impact on how it was written or why he supported it. I don't believe that. But he has said, and we, you know, most experts say it's pretty hard to believe, but he has said that his accountants have told him that he will suffer for this tax plan. So if that's what he's telling us, then I think it's not an unfair question to say, how can that be, or show us, or how will it impact us?
Yeah, show us your taxes, Mr. President, and then we'll know. This texter said, John, you are so wrong again. Listen to Steve. Hey, John, all the money he makes from hotels and resorts outside the U.S. would not subject to U.S. taxes, if I understand the new law. Hey, King John, you need to demand that Trump share his tax returns before he's allowed to sign the new legislation. Anyone who writes off almost $1 billion and lies as frequently as he does cannot be trusted. So this is the thing. This is why I think that it's engaging, or it's, you know, tantalizing, is that we've caught the president maybe in another lie here. And it's something that you will go to your grave pointing out if that's all you want to do. And I just don't think that's so productive.
Well,
I think we need to notice them, and we need to call him for what he is, but let's not be distracted by them, because that's either his plan or that's the net, and that's not a good idea.
Okay, I agree with that. I think there's a difference between catching someone lying about whether they got A's in junior high, or catching someone lying about whether they, I don't know, are on the verge of curing. I mean, this is an active situation. This is a current one.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know,
it's the latest. There'll be one.
No, it's a current
one. Another
one
tomorrow.
No, but you could tell a story about something that happened long ago. Okay, you know, fine. You caught him there. That was ancient history. This is something that's ongoing now, and it's being, you know, given to us as a middle class tax cut. And, you know, the president, in selling it, has said, you know, my accountants, they tell me that this
okay,
is
but
bad
here's,
for me.
The president also said this about selling this tax cut. Quote, we pay the highest taxes anywhere in the world. That's categorically not true. That's, you could call that a lie if he knows that's not true, or it's just bad with the facts. But I think that's a data point I'm interested in. Not Donald Trump's income tax returns. He's never going to show them to us, and we can be upset about it forever, but then we're just going to have, you know, bad digestion, and we're still not going to have his taxes. So don't focus on that.
Well, if you understand what I'm saying, I agree with you, except for the fact that he's using it as a way of building support, is saying that he actually would suffer.
Okay.
And so if that's the case, I think there is a bit of an obligation to show how that could be.
Let me ask you this. You know how Trump is this famous liar? And the New York Times a few weeks ago did a story where they literally chronicled everything he said that's not true since his presidency. And it came to about two a day. Maybe it was one a day. It doesn't matter at that point. I'll get to some specific numbers in a second here. But the point is, people were critical of the New York Times. They said, well, sure, you found all of these things Donald Trump said that weren't exactly true. Well, why don't you do it for Barack Obama? So they did. For 8 years. Now, it's harder to do it for Clinton or Reagan or Bush 1 or even Bush 2, because we didn't have the social media and we didn't have PolitiFact and we didn't have the Pinocchios back then. So it's hard to go back and get all of their tweets. A, they weren't. B, listen to all the speeches and then run them through the mill. But that happens now for everything that Barack Obama said. And it's happened, obviously, for everything that Donald Trump has said, for everything that Hillary Clinton said, for that matter, on the campaign trail. How many lies did Barack Obama tell in his 8 years in office? And yes, one of them is you can keep your health care. You can keep your doctor. That's one. How many total lies in 8 years were they able to substantiate that Barack Obama told? 18. 18. 18. Donald Trump is averaging 124 a year, which would be one every 3 days. And listen to this. They said, we have used the word lies. If anything, though, the word is unfair to Obama and Bush. When they became aware that they had been saying something untrue, they stopped doing it. Barack Obama did not continue to claim that Americans could still be able to keep their existing health insurance under Obamacare, for example. And George Bush changed the way he spoke about Iraq's weapons capability. He no longer said that they had weapons of mass destruction when we didn't find any. He stopped claiming that. But the New York Times, David Leonhardt wrote for the paper, Trump is different. When he is caught lying, he will often try to discredit the people telling the truth, be they judges, scientists, FBI or CIA officials, journalists or members of Congress. Trump is trying to make truth irrelevant. It is extremely damaging to democracy, and it is not an accident. It's core to his political strategy, wrote the New York Times on Sunday. So I appreciate the business of keeping score on this. 18 for Obama. And by the way, you know what? And in that 124 a year rate that the president is on, they did not include exaggerations. They did not include interpretations like, well, he sees the world differently, so he says that. And it's not true, but that's the way he sees it. Then they didn't count that as a lie. They only spoke to things that are, you know, provably, categorically not true. When the president said, if you look at President Obama and other presidents, most of them did not make calls to the family members of fallen soldiers, that's not true. When he said that Barack Obama had tapped Trump's phones, they count that as a lie. You could argue that point, but they came up with 124 rate, 108 so far, 103 so far. I don't know why I'm going down that road now.
You started it.
I don't know that I did. Well, it's because of what the president's been saying about the tax plan. John, you can keep your doctor. You can keep your policy. We're not spying on Americans. Well, so two of those I've counted in the 18. That's the thing. If you say, did Barack Obama tell you the truth all the time? Everybody goes to, you can keep your doctor. Because that's the most famous lie of the Barack Obama presidency. And then he stopped telling it. And that's the one of the 18 that they found.
And what was the rationale for that? Was they thought that the doctor available on the plan would have been so much cheaper and more attractive that you would have gone to that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
People wouldn't want to keep their own doctor because they'd have to pay so much more for it.
Here's the question on that. Did they know that that wasn't going to be true, but they just said it to sell it? Or were they honestly telling you what they thought the case would be? I don't know the answer to that, but we're counting that as a lie. They said it and it wasn't true. So you get that one if you're keeping score on Barack Obama. If you're keeping score on Donald Trump, which one do you want? I've got a bushel basket here. So I'm not persuaded that you can throw, well, you get to keep your doctor in my face because, yeah, he owns that. He has to own that. But I don't have 100 other to give you. And the president is averaging about one a day, or whatever it comes to. John, when and where you the last eight years of lies? Hypocrisy is what the left has become. Yeah, so that's what you're up against. You throw this information out there, and some people just don't want to hear it. But that's what the left-leaning New York Times has come up with. After 2:30, we'll talk to somebody at the Washington Post about the tax plan that is passing through the House now. This is interesting. They have what the current percent of taxes are that you're paying and what the proposed rates are when this passes that you'll pay. So, for instance, if your income is between $38,700, say $39,000 to $94,000, are you making between $39,000 to $94,000? You're currently paying 25%. The new tax plan, you'll pay 22%. It'll go down 3 percentage points. That's a lot if you're an individual. If you are filing jointly and your income is, let's pick, between $19,000 and $77,000, you're going to go from 15% to 12%. If you're making $77,000 to $156,000 as a married couple, if you're filing joint, $77,000 to $156,000, you're going to go from 25% to 22%. It goes down.
But the problem with, and I've tried to figure out with my own situation.
Yeah, me too.
And it gets really hard and complicated because that's if you are not
itemizing
or writing off, or, you know, how about those of us who are going to lose what we pay in state income taxes, we're going to lose that as a deduction. So that means the percentage we're going to be paying is higher.
Yeah.
Property taxes, the same thing.
On line one, Joe wanted to say something. Joe, you're on the air. What can I do for you?
Hi. There's two points that I would like to bring up. One is, if I were to lie to an FBI agent or sign a bad tax return, I can go to jail. But Trump can lie every time he opens his mouth with absolutely no repercussions. I'm just venting a little bit. The other point I want to bring up is with this windfall tax relief that corporations are going to get, they say that some companies are going to buy back their stock. Well, that's probably good because that will increase the value of the stock remaining. But I think what's going to happen is a lot of companies, they're not going to hire more people. What they're going to do is invest the money they save in robotics that they can't afford today. And nobody has brought that up at all.
There was a survey out about what robotics are going to do to Americans' jobs this week, and from Chicago.
Yeah.
In fact, we're going to talk more about that soon. And it's interesting. A lot of people are worried about not losing their jobs to, you know, white college-educated people or to immigrants. They're worried about losing their jobs to machines.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's the only 2 points I wanted to bring up.
Thanks for the phone call. We're going to talk about that. And by the way, Elif, let's do this first. Elif, what is the total in the John Williams virtual kettle for the Salvation Army?
$4,715, John.
Okay. I think last time it was $4,200. So what's the percent now?
47% of $10,000 on your goal, John.
47%. Here's the problem. My last show this week is Thursday. We got to get to 100%. I don't know how much money. I got to put this pen down. I don't know how much money we're going to get on our podcast, which will stream live on Facebook tomorrow. Hopefully $5,000, but we're not halfway there. Do you know, Elif, is that on the top of my page, on my Facebook page, is the link to the Salvation Army there right now?
I believe it is, John. Let me check on that.
Yeah, do that. And if it's not, would you move it back up?
Sure, John. John.
Yeah. What was the other thing we were going to mention there, Elif?
Saturday?
Oh, yeah. So on Saturday, who's that that's coming on to talk to us a little bit about robotics?
That's one of the stats he's going to discuss with you. Max Temkin of Cards of Humanity. Cards Against Humanity.
Cards Against Humanity had a very interesting survey. It was very funny. For instance, the Cards Against Humanity fans, I guess that's who was participating in this. I guess people who don't play the game could too. But they asked him a bunch of questions. One was, do you pee in the shower? And then they broke it down by men and women, by age, by ethnic background. Asians don't mind as much as Caucasian Americans do, for instance, and by political party. Which political party do you think is more likely to pee in the shower? Okay, I don't even know the answer to that, but it's in the survey. You're saying, gosh, John, how does that help me understand the tax bill?
I would love to know how the party of the surveyee corresponds to how they answer.
The party of the surveyee.
So I wonder what Democrats view of it and what Republicans view of it, right? So if you're a Republican and you don't like Democrats, I wonder if you would think a Democrat would be more likely to do that than a Republican, or if you're...
Yeah, right. That's they do it that way, too. It's very interesting. I don't remember exactly. Boy, listen Saturday if you want to know what Republicans think about Democrats peeing in the shower. Yes, indeedy. We've got you a show.
It's the eve of the eve.
That's right. And they're just 2 days before Christmas. We'll be talking about that on Saturday, among other things. But it's a really funny set of data points. Some of them are more what you might expect. And one of them was about robots. Are you worried that a robot will replace your job? And then Democrats and Republicans feel quite differently about that. People's income levels are factors in that. Their ethnic backgrounds are different in that. It was just a really kind of bizarre, as you might expect from Cards Against Humanity, survey. And we're going to go through that and laugh along with it on our Saturday show at 10 a.m. Remember, tomorrow at 11 a.m., watch Facebook, WGN Radio's Facebook page. We will stream live the Mincing Rascals podcast there. And there you can donate to the Salvation Army. Elif, have you done that? Have you put the link to my virtual kettle on the top of my Facebook feed?
Yes.
Good. Groovy. Thank you for that. It's 2:37. This texter said, hey, John, I worked as a manufacturing engineer for 30 years. Robots replacing people is being oversold. Jeff in Homewood. Thank you for that, Jeff. Heather Long joins us again from the Washington Post. She writes about economics there and has been our guest before, talking about, among other things, this proposed tax plan, which Steve just told you passed the House onto the Senate. Hi, Heather. Welcome back. How are you?
Hi, good to be here.
Any surprises in this? This is going maybe as we thought. Is anything different in the language? What's jumping out today?
It's going about as smooth as possible today. They even got more votes than expected, as we've talked about before. A lot of folks in California and New York and New Jersey, perhaps some there in that Chicago area, were worried about that state and local tax deduction going away. And so some of those Republican representatives from those areas threatened to vote no. But in the end, they only lost 12 votes. And it passed with an easy margin of 227.
So my SALT deduction is, I'm not going to get that. My state and local taxes, I don't get to deduct that, right?
Well, you can deduct up to $10,000. So it's really the folks, I keep saying, if you're deducting $20,000 or more, this bill is not good for you.
Yeah.
You know, if you're kind of in that $10,000 to $20,000, because the tax rates are going down so much, you're probably still okay. But it really just depends. If you're over about $20,000, $25,000, this is going to be rough on you.
We talked about this the other day, and I don't know if the information is any clearer to any of us today, Heather, but okay, that's great. That is, the rate's coming down, but I lose the deduction. So now I got to figure out if my deductions will be greater than this new tax rate deduction that I'm going to get. You know, am I going to come out ahead or not? And there are some calculators out there, but I don't know that any of us will really know until we file our 2018 income taxes. Is that right?
Yes and no. I mean, so the president keeps saying you'll start seeing it in February, and people kind of scratch their head like, what do you mean, February? You know, that's a little early. We're not going to file those tax returns for another year. But actually, remember, if most people go to a job and their employer gives them that paycheck every 2 weeks or once a month. And so what he means by that is starting around February or March, people who are getting those paychecks from their employer are probably going to see larger paychecks because there won't be as much withheld for federal income taxes.
Well, sure. So that's, I mean, yeah, I get that. And I think that will be noticeable and appreciated by most people. My read on this, Heather, is that most people are going to see more money one day magically in their take-home pay, right?
Yeah, so the number to keep in your head, I think we talked about a little bit on the air here before, 85% of Americans next year will see lower taxes, and then only about 5% will see taxes going up. So that other middle, you know, 10 or 15% is going to be about the same. But yeah, the vast majority of these listeners are going to get a tax cut or see no change at all.
Sunday, John Dickerson asked Steve Mnuchin, the Treasury Secretary, about the $1.5 trillion in debt, or maybe more, that this will generate. Mnuchin said that that's simply not true. That's not going to happen. And then he cited other studies that predict that the tax plan will generate more income than it's going to give up. Who should we believe on this?
Well, I'm not usually one to poke fingers, but I think you got to remember that his department, Secretary Mnuchin, was the one that released a one page trying to claim that this tax bill would pay for itself fully. Now, nobody in economics on the left or the right would ever release a one page quote analysis. That's nothing. You know, that's your second grader does more homework than that. So, you know, I think you got to take, if you look actually at legit economists from the left and from the right, I was just talking to Glenn Hubbard, who was in the George H.W. Bush administration and in the George W. Bush administration, this Bush's top economist. And he and I were talking about this, and I take his word pretty well. He said, look, this bill is not going to pay for itself. It will definitely add to the deficit. You know, the question is the bill still worth doing? And the Republican side says, yes, it is, because the biggest problem in America is we've had slow growth, and this is our best chance, you know, to get businesses back here and to try to boost the growth. And that's what they think the biggest problem is. You know, folks on the left and folks who are concerned about the debt and the deficit say, I don't know if I think this bill is good enough. Yes, we needed to make some changes to the corporate tax side, but this bill is just, it sets up too much of a painful situation in the next 3 to 5 years where we're back at the same place and we have to decide, do we raise taxes then or do we cut Social Security and Medicare? And that's a painful decision.
The number I have in my head is like 75% or 85%, and it was something like the ratio of the debt that we'll have on the books, $20 trillion, to the GDP of the country. And it's getting, those two numbers are getting closer and closer together. Do you know what I'm talking about there?
Yeah, you're right. So, at the moment we're sitting around 70 to 75% debt to GDP ratio. So what that means is, you know, you take a country like Greece or Japan, which are some of the most heavily indebted countries in the world, and they have spent basically two times the size of their economy. They're in debt. You know, that's just crazy amounts, like 200, 150, 200%. For most of the world, people get really nervous when you get about 100%. So that, you know, think about it, like if you borrowed your entire value of your house, that's a pretty scary place to be. And that's kind of what we're talking about when you get to a debt to GDP ratio of 100%. So right now we're at about 75. After this bill passes, and given the already growing debt we're originally forecast to have even without this bill, we're supposed to rise in the next 10 years to about 85 to 90% debt to GDP. So we're getting close, and that's what we're where these red flags are going off. At some point, you know, this is going to start to really hurt the economy.
Well, boy, macroeconomics must be different than my household version, because if we had a $200,000 house and we were getting close to $200,000 in debt, I wouldn't sleep at night. I don't know what a healthy number is for an economy. Like, debt can be good and a useful instrument. I get that. But this just sounds crazy to me.
Again, that's the problem. Nobody knows, and I was talking to a bunch of experts today, again, from the left to the right, and, you know, there's a big disagreement about what you're just saying. What is that number that's really going to cause problems? And at the moment, we just keep adding it because China and Japan and Europe, folks around the world keep buying our debt. And as long as they're buying, as long as that appetite, as America's bonds are seen as super safe, we're fine to issue debt. But does there come a day when those countries no longer want to buy, and then it does become problematic?
So we are
really wants to find out.
Yeah. So I'm sending money via my tax debt service to China and Japan and other countries, peoples who are buying our bonds. Is that right?
Yes, a very significant part of those repayments are going overseas. That's right.
So this is Reagan's trickle-down economics, or is this different, what we're banking on here?
A lot of it is. The big difference in this bill is, back in the Reagan era, they were really, the main goal was to lower those tax rates on individuals, so the wealthy and the middle class. The difference here is the real driver of this bill is to lower the tax rates on corporations.
Yeah.
And about everybody agrees that America's tax rate at 35% is not, our corporate tax rate is too high. You know, when Ireland's down at 12%, most of Europe's down around 20 to 25, we really can't be at 35. That's not competitive.
Yeah.
Democrats agree with that too. You know, the question was, how low did it go? The question was, what happened to the notion when we started this process? The president and the Congress, Republicans kept saying, oh, it's okay, we're going to lower the rate, but we're also going to eliminate loopholes so we won't add anything to the debt. Well, that's not what happened at the end of the day. We lowered that corporate tax rate, but we didn't close many loopholes, and that's why we have a bill that's going to add to the debt.
Anything else you think I should know relative to all of this? Looks like it's going to pass, so in February I might have more money in my paycheck. Any other red flags or white flags, good signs that stand out to you, Heather?
Honestly, I think what I keep reminding people, and I was getting emails from readers all weekend, I actually think this bill could very well play well for Republicans in 2018, despite the fact that it's longer term likely to add to the debt, longer term likely to make inequality worse. The reality is the U.S. economy is humming along. Unemployment can easily drop below 4% next year for the first time since that boom time in the 1990s and the dot-com era. We can easily see a couple of quarters of close to 4% growth, that dream number Trump was talking about. If that scenario could very easily play out, and whether or not the tax bill helped or hurt that doesn't matter for most minds of most voters. They've got more money in their pocket, they're seeing better economic numbers, and that could play well in 2018.
One of my listeners, real quick, just texted, what happens with personal exemptions on the 1040 forms?
Yeah, that's the best question. You kind of alluded to this earlier. So personal exemptions are going away. So that's why you hear these concerns from larger families. One of my colleagues did a story about a lot of large families in Utah who are actually going to be worse off from this bill, because even though the standard deduction is going up, it's basically doubling, you lose that personal exemption. At the moment, you can take that $4,050 personal exemption and multiply it by every member of your household. So if you've got, 8 kids, 10 kids, that's a lot of extra money money you were able to deduct that you will no longer be able to deduct.
Well, will I claim myself and my spouse?
That's right. So it would have been you, your spouse, and every child living with you.
But I'm not going to get I'm not going to get that anymore?
That's right. That's gone away.
How about me? But do I get to claim myself? No, I don't. It's just I have the standard deduction.
You have the standard, and that's doubled. So for you and your wife, it will now be $24,000 on the standard deduction. So again, for a lot of families of two to four people, not much of a difference. That's basically a wash, getting rid of that personal exemption, but expanding that standard deduction. But as your family gets larger, it's not a wash.
So will it be good? And I understand your point, I think. Will it be good for Republicans in 2018 because we're better off or because the ways that we're worse off are just so hard to understand?
Well, a bit of both. Depends if you're an optimist or a pessimist or what your political leanings are. But but the reality is we are spending $1.5 trillion on this tax cut, so we're going to get some boost next year, and the economy will be better. The question is that momentum going to keep going? A lot of economists say no, and that's what makes us worse off in the long term.
Heather Long writes for The Washington Post. Thanks for your time, Heather.
Thank you. Take care.
It's 2:48. By the way, a question about mortgage rates, interest rates, credit card rates, answered in a minute.
There are many holiday traditions. The lights parade on Michigan Avenue, the lighting of the tree at Rockefeller Center. And then there's the Harlem Globetrotters Christmas special with Ro Khan and Anna DeVlantis.
The chestnuts don't get any warmer.
Join us for this glorious wreck of holiday and hoops.
The Ro Khan Show with Anna DeVlantis. Up next at 3 on 720 WGN.
Grandview buys homes. Do you have a home that you'd like to sell today? Fast and easy? Hello, I'm Tom Detlich with Grandview Homes, and we'll buy your home stress and hassle-free. With Grandview, there is no need to do any repairs, not even any cleanup. We buy homes in any condition. You pay no commissions and no closing costs. And there's no inspections, no realtors, no hassles. It is the fastest and easiest way to sell your home. Call us today and we'll give you a no-obligation fair cash offer in 24 hours and close when you want, as fast as 7 days or longer if you need more time. Take control over the process of selling your home. Choose your own moving day, then take the items you want and leave the stress and the mess to us. Grandview is locally owned and operated right here in Chicagoland. So call the name you can trust, Grandview Homes. Call us at 888-345-BUY-HOMES. That's 888-345-2894. Or visit us at GrandviewHomes.com.
Tune in to John Williams' Home for the Holidays segment this Thursday in the 1 o'clock hour for your chance to send a special message to a loved one you can't be with this holiday season. You'll receive a Lou Malnati's Tastes of Chicago gift card. Send your loved ones a taste of sweet home Chicago this holiday season. Ship Lou Malnati's famous deep dish pizzas and other Windy City favorites like Eli's Cheesecake, Nuts on Clark, and much more nationwide. Order at loutogo.com.
Shirts and ties from Hammermade will make the perfect gifts this year. It's all about how a shirt fits, right? Well, Hammermade shirts have a tailored fit. They're not too tight and not big and boxy either. They're long enough to tuck in, but short enough to wear untucked. Every Hammermade shirt is premium and of a limited run. See why Hammermade is Rokan's favorite store. Visit a Hammermade store at Old Orchard, Oakbrook Center, and the Nordstrom Building on Michigan Avenue. Or just go to Hammermade.com.
Listen, learn, laugh. 720 WGN.
It's 2:51. This is WGN Radio. John Williams in the Allstate Showcase Studio here on Michigan Avenue. Ella wants me to remind you that at 110 and 210 tomorrow, 110 and 210 tomorrow, our Harry Potter Challenge. There's that show, Potted Potter, at Water Tower Place at the Broadway Playhouse. We've got tickets to that. Here's how we're going to give them away. We've assembled a panel of staff experts on Harry Potter. You call in and you ask them a trivia question about Harry Potter. If they don't know the answer, you win the tickets. Or they may have a question for you. If you get it right, you win the tickets. If you know somebody who's a Harry Potter fan, they'd love this for Christmas. And it'd be fun to listen to, too. So 110 and 210 tomorrow. Get your kids or grandkids or friends who know Harry Potter to listen. And we'll do a little challenge. That's the Harry Potter Challenge at 110 and 210 on tomorrow's show. Speaking of finances, I want to do a little retail economics here. We were talking about the budget plan. David Hochberg from Pearl Mortgage is in our studio. Hi, David. How are you?
Hi, John. I'm fantastic.
So do you think this tax plan is going to affect your business or my borrowing money for a home?
It's going to impact the people over $10,000 that you get to write off on your real estate taxes. Obviously, it's going to hurt those folks. And it's still to be determined. You know, you've been hearing a lot. If the people are going to save a ton of money as well as what they're losing on the real estate taxes, I guess it's a net zero, right? It doesn't hurt anybody. So I just think there's a lot of panic right now, and nobody knows exactly what it's going to be.
But I wonder if that would affect the list price of a home. That is, if you figure somebody's going to borrow 80% of a purchase price of a house, you want to purchase, you want to set the price so that 80% will enable them to write off. So that they won't have to pay extra in taxes.
Right. Well, here's what it is. For every $500, for every $100,000 financed, it's about $525, okay? So for every $525 that you increase or lose a deduction, it's going to decrease, theoretically, somebody's value by $100,000.
Right.
Because it's going to cost them $525 more a
to
month
borrow that money.
To borrow that money. So, again, there's just been so much on the left and on the right, and nobody really knows what's in it because it's just been... It's like the Obamacare thing. It's been rammed through and nobody knows what's in there until you read it. Well, now we're going to have a chance to read it and see how it impacts people in the real life, in the real world, I should say.
So you don't know. I mean, it's hard to say how this is going to impact.
It's hard to say.
But interest rates are going up, right?
Interest rates have been going up. The short-term interest rates have increased three times this year. Started the year at 3.75. It's now currently at 4.5, which is costing people money every single month on their credit card balances that they carry and also on their home equity line of credit that they're carrying balances on, and also on adjustable rate mortgages that are resetting.
So prime, that's prime you're quoting me there.
The prime interest rate, right.
3.75 to 4.5 as of this year.
Mm-hmm.
But does interest rates going up also benefit people because maybe you've got money in a passbook savings account or you've got a CD? I mean,
if
the other side of the
banks pass it through. The other side of the cage.
So if I go higher than 1/100th of a percentage point that I'm currently earning on my
right.
savings account. I mean, really, though, will that... The stock market keeps going up.
Stock market keeps going up. People are theoretically making money if you have money in the stock market.
Well, if you have a 401k or any mutual fund.
It's a lot higher than it was on January 1st.
Hopefully
so you're doing okay.
Yeah, and if you don't, I'm sorry for you because you've missed an opportunity here.
Sure.
But I guess it's frustrating because you say, okay, I will take it out of my mutual funds. I think that the market has peaked. I'm going to put it in a CD or in a savings account. But you get nothing for that.
Right.
You go backwards.
It's not being passed through right now to the consumer, and the banks are making the money. And that's what you're saying. And people don't know what to do. What we're getting a lot of calls on are a lot of people are freaked out because if you borrow $10,000 on a line of credit, and a lot of people have line of credits, if you borrow $10,000, that $10,000 is basically costing you now $62.50 more a month than it did at the beginning of the year. Next year, they're talking about increasing it three more times. So you're looking at another 0.75 point increase next year. So there, now you're up to $130 a month, right? So now you're talking some major, major, major financial impact on people's lives. I said, 0.25 point, everybody can handle $21, right? You just, it's one less tank of gas, it's one less coffee, it's one less meal.
For the year.
Yeah, you know, or a month.
Per month.
But now you're up to $62.50 a month. Now you're up to $750 a year. Double that next year if you have $10,000 out on a line of credit. The average line of credit that we're seeing is a lot greater than that, $50,000 to $100,000 what people have out on lines of credit.
What have they used that money for?
A number of different things. Send people to college, do home improvements, pay off credit card bills.
So that's a second mortgage that they're paying.
Second mortgage, or buy a house.
And the average is more than $10,000?
Oh, sure. The average that we're seeing on Team Hochberg at Pearl Mortgage averages right about $50,000 to $60,000 on what people are carrying line of credit. And we've gotten bombed with phone calls this week from people that are freaked out that it's going to go higher.
Should they convert? Should they find a way to just take the variable and lock in now at whatever it is, thinking
sure.
it might go higher?
You got to look at the big picture. It's not about the rate. It's about the monthly payment. So a lot of people are sitting with, you know, don't want to touch their 3.5, 3.625, 3.75, 75% first loan, but they've got $150,000 to $150,000 on a second loan. And what they don't realize is that second loan is just going to continue to go up. So look at the overall payment. It's not about the rate. If you could combine both loans together and your overall payment is about the same, you win. And then you don't have the variability of increasing interest rates in the future. The other short-term plan is that if people know that they're going to be moving, look at an adjustable rate mortgage, combine them both and take the risk out of your life by lowering the payment or fixing the payment so it doesn't go up in the future.
Somebody texted, I don't know if you know the answer to this. I don't think I do either. Is the $10,000 real estate tax on personal property limited to one piece of property or all properties?
That's a great question to ask.
I would imagine it would be all of them, right?
Well, they were talking about getting rid of the tax deduction on second homes as well. So I haven't read the final bill yet. I don't know what's going to be final yet. I don't know. I haven't read what the final bill is.
Seemed to me like if you have state and local taxes, if you're able to deduct your property taxes up to $10,000, why would they care if it was one property or two?
Right, because people have multiple properties they don't want to give the credit to. But again, we'll all see what's going on out there when this thing passes. Okay, you know, so you got a joint bill. It's now going through. We'll see what comes out on the other end, and we'll all start shoveling the deck and worry about it then.
Anything else you want to pass along about what this bill means for us?
Well, this bill means it's going to cost. Again, I don't know what this bill is going to mean for us because it's freaking a lot of people out, and a lot of people are happy. So I'll just wait to see. You know, whenever anything came down, the Obamacare, everybody's like, "Oh, it's going. You know, the world's going to end." You look out on Michigan Avenue. There's tons of people here. I took the train down. The train was packed. It didn't really impact too many people, even though it cost a lot of people a lot more money for their health insurance.
Okay, with one other question. Interest rates going up a little bit.
Yep.
I have a credit card. Sometimes we carry a balance. Don't we all? So is my credit card rate going up?
Oh, yeah.
Don't people have a locked rate on their cards, or are most credit cards
variable? Most cards are variable rate loans that go up according to the interest rate. So what people don't realize is if you charge November and don't pay it off in December, that balance, you get charged interest on that balance that you charge in November until you pay it off. So they're nailing you with interest on a perpetual basis until you pay off the month that you borrowed in. So it's a very, very, very slippery slope.
What's the average credit card rate? What do you think people are paying on
that? The average credit card rate. Well, if you have good credit, you get 0% financing. If you have terrible credit, it's 28 to 30% financing on people's credit. On credit cards.
The world is upside down. The people who are least able to afford 28% are the ones we charge 28%
correct.
To.
Correct, yeah.
It shouldn't be that way.
I agree.
259. David Hochberg, how can people reach you, by the way?
Very simple. Go to WGNDavid.com or just give us a call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 312-751-1333.
Thanks for popping in, Mr. Hochberg.
Thanks for having me, bud.
Anna DeVlantis is doing that, too. And Justin Kaufman is as well.
Hi, John.
I do not see a Ro Khan under the tree.
No, he is.
What medical procedure is he having done?
Ro Strong at home today.
Okay.
So
yeah.
Returning tomorrow, and he'll be 100%, promises.
Right. How are you, Justin?
I'm good. Good to see you, John. How are
you? Look bright-eyed. And bushy tail.
I feel bright.
Weren't you on about 20 minutes ago?
Yeah.
Where on the clock are you?
I know. I feel like this is time to shine. I don't like that there is actual sunlight outside.
Isn't it weird? You're talking
you
and there's.
Yeah.
It's hard to think.
At least for another.
Because you get both your juices going.
Hour and a half. You got some daylight here.
I know. But hey, you know, I am always happy to ride shotgun with Anna and
No kidding.
We're gonna have fun. He's got a good show ahead. I heard your analysts talking about the tax plan, what it means for you, and I know there are so many questions now that it looks like it's sailing through.
And you know what we didn't ask about, and maybe you guys will get into it too, is okay, so what about education costs? What about medical costs? What about child care expenses? What happened? I didn't line item some of those with my
guests.
That's
interesting.
But I don't know what happens to those.
You know, last night we talked about it on the show, and I believe the health care costs are back in.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
The deductions. Adoption was back in. And I'm not sure about, and I think student loans are back in too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they did the compromise, the dance. And I feel like a lot of the stuff people were complaining about or had hysteria around.
I know. I think everybody gets a car. Everybody gets a car on this.
Really?
So. And so, you know, someday our kids are going to have to pay for it. But you know,
isn't that the American way, John? Come on.
Here's what you need to do. If you don't like this president, if you don't like this Congress, if you don't like this tax bill, root for this tax bill because it's your tax bill now.
Right.
It's what it's going to be. Let's hope this damn thing works. I have
agree.
No hope in it, but let's hope it works.
Just like you put the faith in your pilot and hope for his success, I hope for the success of this tax plan. And I hope, as
the
Republicans who backed it have suggested, that we'll all start seeing it and feeling it, and the common economy will continue to rev up. And
if we get more money in our paychecks in February, like the president said, then spend it. I remember George Bush wanted you to spend your money in 2008
right.
or 2007. And if you're a CEO of a company, mm-hmm. I don't want you just keeping this in the bank. Mm-hmm. I want you giving raises, buying more equipment.
Creating jobs.
Creating jobs and creating higher paying jobs.
I think that's the piece of it that's such a mystery. And I think we're gonna drill down on this a little bit later, because does this really provide the incentive that is hoped to raise wages, to create jobs, to take that new corporate tax cut, extra dough you've got lying around, and do those kinds of things that'll really help?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm doing. I am going to bury my money. There's no doubt. Like, in February, we're going to get that extra cut. I'm going to take that cut out, and I'm going right into, and it's not even my backyard.
Now, where do you live, by the way? I want the address on.
Exactly.
It's
just going to be different spots in public parks. So there, and I'll draw a map like it's the 17th century.
That's a good investment strategy, Justin. Yep. All right, I'm getting out of the way.
All right, John.
Have a really good show.
Enjoy the afternoon.